I'm talking today to Jennifer Poole, who is running for City Council at Large number 3. Jennifer, first question I'd like to ask, why are you running for this office?
Well, Charles, I have been an advocate and activist here in the city of Houston most of the years I've been here, at least in the last 20 years, since I volunteered on Anise Parker's first campaigns. I believe that I have something I can give to the community as a whole. I have a vast experience. My resume doesn't do justice to how much experience I do have in various areas. And I can bring all of that to the table. I've been effective in many ways getting things done in other areas as well as within the city. And I believe that on council I can do even more. And that's what I want to do.
Now, you ran for council 2 years ago.
Yes.
In at-large number 2. What would you say you learned from that experience?
Oh, where to spend my money better. Make sure that the people who are working on your campaign, whether they're paid or not, or the volunteers, really have their heart in the right place. Knowing my people better. Also, there are areas that I didn't have as much information on as I do now. I thought I was well informed on most things, but I found some weaknesses in my own knowledge and historic knowledge in many cases. So the last year in 12, I spent a lot of time keeping up with on things. And what I didn't know last time, I've studied to learn more. If I'm going to be the effective city council member I expect to be, then I need to know as much as possible about various areas in the city.
Okay. What would you say are your top priorities as a council member? What are the things you would are most interested in doing as a council member?
I believe in fiscal responsibility. I am a small business owner. I have to make my payroll every week. I have to balance my checkbook. I have to operate at a profit or I go out of business. And I want to see the city take care of those businesses, areas where we haven't. Pensions always come up on questionnaires and questions when people want to know. What about? We have an obligation to those people. Collectively, as a city government, we gave our word to the workers, either fire, police, or public service workers. We gave our word to them, and we need to honor that. Now, due to financial difficulties in various areas, the Great Recession that they're calling it now that we're past it, we didn't have the money, but we need to find a way of making those pensions solvent and making some adjustments so that the future they'll be solvent then too.
Since you brought that up, I was going to address this later in the interview, but since you brought it up, as you know, Mayor Parker has been trying to get legislature to pass a bill or sponsor a bill in the first place that would require the firefighters to meet and confer with the city over their pension fund. Firefighters say this is unnecessary. Their pension fund is adequately financed, and the city is just looking for a way to cut the amount that it contributes to the mm-hmm. pension fund. The city argues that pension contributions from the city are growing at an unsustainable rate, and they need to do this. Also, they claim that they don't have full information from the firefighters' benefit fund. What is your position on the city seeking legislation to require the firefighters to meet and confer with them over their pensions?
Well, I think that, first of all, having one of your major parts of your city budget out of the control of city council and the people of the city, it doesn't do justice to the citizens and the taxpayers. The legislature took that authority, and so the city is held captive to it. I think that The firefighters should come halfway with the city. I believe that state should give the negotiating power back to the city, just as the policemen do. The other city workers, they confer with the city. They can come to a conclusion. You can negotiate, work things out, like the firemen did, as well as city employees during a very tough financial time. It's my belief that the legislature erred in taking the firefighters out of city control. You have, in fact, usurped the power of the citizens of the city of Houston by doing so. I think legislation to make it possible where that can be fair and balanced for the citizens of Houston is the right thing to do.
Okay. What's your opinion overall on the city's finances? As you know, in 2010, 2011, the city had to cut a lot of services to deal with a sizable financial shortfall, revenue shortfall. Since then, the economy has gotten better in Houston. Revenues are up. The city has basically restored the services that it cut.
Mm-hmm.
What's your opinion overall of the city's current budget and the city's basic financial picture?
Well, I think our enterprise areas are in good shape. You know, the airport fund and all the other funds. The what's left, I'm pleased with the last budget where the mayor, with few exceptions, have been able to restore all of the major cuts that were done in the past. I would like to see digress a moment. Economically, with home prices going up, without changing tax base, with home prices going up, we're going to have more revenues. With business activity up, we're also going to have more sales tax revenues. With construction industry booming currently, the permits and fees are booming too. So the city's going to have more money coming up. I would like to see that the city set aside part of that to be, at some percentage decided by the mayor and council, that some of that be set aside to bring pensions into solvency. I think that areas where we can expand as the city grows, the police department, fire department, and other city services will need to grow to accommodate our growing city. However, we need to look long-term to bring any debts down as well as any additional services we need. But I think a percentage set aside for pension solvency is a good idea for the long-term health of the city to overcome. How long our booming economy is going to last, we don't know. But we need to take action now to ensure that long-term the city will be solvent.
Okay. You're right, there's a lot of construction going on in the city, and the city recently overhauled its some of its ordinance anyway on dense development, Chapter 42. But lately in the news, there's been a lot of stories about developers wanting to build things here, there, and everywhere that the residents don't like. You know, the Ashby High Rise, there's some development in my neighborhood in the Woodland Heights, there's now this thing on San Philippi, where the residents are just up in arms over developers wanting to build, you know, usually multi-story projects.
Yes.
In what's otherwise areas that tend to just have single-family homes. You know, on the one hand, you know, they're doing that because there's a lot of demand to live in the city, and this is the only way to do that. On the other hand, the residents feel like they don't have a whole lot of control over their own neighborhood. What's your take on this situation, and what, if anything, do you think council ought to do about it?
Well, first and foremost, I'm a native Texan, and so I believe in property rights. I believe that people who own property have certain rights, and they should be protected. However, I'm a person of balance. Therefore, a property owner also has duties and responsibilities in their ownership of property, which has to do with an entire area, which I hope you'll ask me about, and if not, I'll mention later. But I believe in development. I believe our city, because we don't have zoning, we are constantly renewing ourselves over the long term. However, building high rises like Ashley right in the middle, Ashby right in the middle of a residential area when it's not desirable, when you don't have the necessary streets and infrastructure to support the building and the number of vehicles, and you don't have enough mass transit to carry people to and from there, the city should have the ability to look at that. And if the developers aren't willing to pay the necessary infrastructure to expand those areas I've talked about, then there should be a way of putting it, stopping it. We have a mechanism now. It's called the Planning Commission. For Ashby to be built, it had to have variances, necessary variances for it. It had to have accommodations from the city. Somewhere along the line, that broke down. Council can do something about that. The whole Heights issue around Walmart, again, this has something to do with planning. The city has the ability to make the accommodations that we sometimes make with developers a little tighter to make them comply and listen to the public. If you're not wanted in a neighborhood, development-wise, the city should not go out of its way to promote that development. If the citizens should have the right to speak on this issue. The Walmart issue, the Ashby high-rise issue, Ashby's been a long-term thing, but there's a lot of other areas. The council can do by, I like to use the word tweaking, which it means just working around the edges as far as the rules and regulations within already passed ordinances to make it where the citizens and the developer can find a balanced approach to development in the city. I don't want to put a stop to it. I don't want to put brakes on it, but it needs to be balanced. And city council can do something about that.
Okay. Recently, the city won a grant from Michael Bloomberg's foundation.
$1 million grant.
Right,
yeah.
$1 million grant to develop a solution that they're calling One Bin for All that would essentially combine trash and recyclable pick and composting into a single bin solution that would dramatically increase the amount of reusable material the city generates, reduce the amount that gets sent to landfills. It's an unproven technology as yet. It's being developed. One environment group in particular, the Texas Campaign for the Environment, thinks that this is a bad idea. Thinks that it's not going to work the way the city wants it to, and that the city would be better off concentrating instead on expanding the single stream recycling to more residences and neighborhoods. What's your opinion on that?
Well, you use the term single stream stream recycling. That is what you're talking about, the one bin.
No, it's two separate things. Recycling, you still separate your trash from your recyclables. The one bin, it all goes in
okay.
one thing.
All right. Tomatoes, tomatoes here. The main thing is that I would like to see recycling available to everyone in the city. I think we should expand it to those that wish to recycle and want to recycle. Then I think we need to make that available to everyone. There's some people that don't care. Now, under the grant for the single bin system, you're absolutely correct. It's not a proven system. In many areas, it's been tried, and it hasn't worked. And it's eventually failed, and they've moved on from it. I would like to hope that Houston really has the ability to do the impossible. I believe this city's great, and we can do just about anything we set our mind to. And I think that the pilot program, which is all this is for, would be something that we can try. I think we look at it. Whether it's the long-term solution, maybe not. But this is an opportunity to see it and try it as far as a pilot program. If we can make it work, like we've done many other ways the city of Houston that said couldn't be done, I think we should try it. But before that is anywhere close to being reality, the city needs to expand its recycling to every neighborhood that wants to have it. It needs to be available to them.
Okay. An issue that has come up is, you know, Houston has established a reputation lately as being an excellent food town. There's been a large proliferation of food trucks. But one place they can't operate is downtown. The city ordinances prevent that from happening. The food trucks are trying to change that city ordinance. They've run into some resistance so far from council. What's your opinion on that? Would you favor changing city ordinances to allow food trucks to operate downtown and in the medical center?
Well, I'm not going to use the excuse of propane tanks. Inside joke. I believe that a responsible council member needs to look at all aspects of the business industry. I like food trucks myself. You know, when I get a chance and I see the right one, I'll stop, and even when I'm in other parts of the city, stop and get a bite. I find their food very good, hot, fresh. However, in the downtown area, parking's really a problem. And if those trucks are going to park, they're taking away parking spaces from somewhere else. Also, the restaurants that are already downtown or in other areas in the city as a whole, they pay property taxes. They pay a lot of other things that don't necessarily are paid by the food trucks. I mean, they pay their fee, they have to have their inspections, but the overall aspect of doing business in the city, they don't have to adhere to a lot of the things the restaurants who have been established, the ones that are on the ground. And I don't think there's not a fairness there. Now, I don't have a solution right now, but I look at that as what's fair when I can roll up to a parking space and maybe put $6 in for several hours or for a half a day, and the restaurant 100 feet away is paying thousands of dollars a year in taxes to the city, which adds to the growth of the city, which adds to the budget, the ability of the city to do things. There's an inequity there. But I don't want to take away the opportunity for the entrepreneur to have his truck. But the truck owner needs to understand that the restaurant's paying a whole lot more money to the city than they are. They only pay sales taxes and a few fees for licensing.
Okay. In 2001, there was a charter referendum in Houston that forbade the city from providing domestic partner benefits to its employees.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, the Supreme Court recently ruled that the Defense Against Marriage Act was unconstitutional, which changes things at a federal level.
Yes.
There are several Texas cities and at least one school district that has, in recent years, voted to give domestic partner benefits to its employees.
Right.
Would you favor putting forward an opportunity in the near future a charter amendment to overturn the 2001 one so that the city could offer domestic partner benefits to its employees?
I would be in favor of that. I have always stood for equality and have fought most of my life for either civil rights. I marched with the ERA in the 70s to the Equal Rights Amendment. So I have a long history of being on the side of equality and fairness. I would be so. I think in the short term, I think that in our next negotiation on health coverage, that we go to the plus one program within that. granted, money in the budget if it's available. But I think that that adds to the fairness. And that takes into consideration someone that may have a same-sex partner. But it also takes into account individuals who have homes that perhaps they can extend the health coverage to another member of their family. So the PLUS One system is an opportunity for the city to provide a service, a benefit, to an employee before an actual change in a referendum is case, because we're looking at years down the road. But under the new environment that the Supreme Court has laid before us, even though in our own state constitution we have prohibitions, I think that that would be a first step in showing that our city, through its city government, respects all individuals and all of their employees.
All right. And because I'm going to ask everyone this question, who are you supporting for mayor?
Niece Parker.
All right. I kind of expected that, but I'm going to ask everyone that question.
I've spent a lot of years volunteering in her campaign and making phone calls and writing a few checks that, yes.
All right. Now, there was, in an earlier question, you alluded to something else that you wanted to bring up, and I guess I'm not sure what that is.
It has to do with one of the things I've talked about for a number of years. But this time, it's... In my literature, I talk about safe to enhance safe and it's safe, safer and secure neighborhoods. And in doing so, most people see that little short sentence and think policing. Well, it goes beyond policing. Safer and more secure neighborhoods is not just policing. It's about a quality of life. It has to do with making it possible for a person to have a neighborhood that doesn't have illegal dumping down at the end of the street, doesn't have somebody with a vacant house that's derelict, or a dangerous building that may have tires laying in it, because they're health hazards. And it goes, I go back to what I said about I believe in property rights, but property duties and responsibilities. The individual who owns that property should be responsible for the care and upkeep. And for some reason, if perhaps there's no one to do it, the city already has, through Chapter 10 of the buildings of neighborhood protection, their dangerous building ordinance, which I've been on that commission now for 5 years. And we can declare that a dangerous building, and if the owners of the property don't do something, then the city can move to tear down the building or clean up the lot. But that leaves the city holding the bag for the cost of doing that. I've been working with Vince Ryan in his office to see their enforcement of Chapter 125 of the Civil Code, which can bring suit against the property owner for not taking care of their property. Many people call that radical and a violation of property rights. But I don't see it that way. I see that as part of their duty in owning property, that they keep it in at least a safe environment. I've been called out on several times because I've been running, and I talk about this. Individuals who have called me on the phone because they haven't gotten redress from the city or anyone else. And I've been able to go out, visit them, see what's there, put them in touch with Vince Ryan's office, as well as an individual on the Houston Police Force that's specifically designated to work on this issue and get some kind of redress. This is something that, for us to talk about quality of life, we need to talk about having safe and secure neighborhoods, and safety has to do with health safety also. And that was what I was alluding to earlier.
All right. and you're running for an open seat, there's multiple candidates, 7, 8, 9. We'll know.
Currently, there's less than that, but last time I ran with 9 others, yeah, there were 10 of us, the 10 dwarfs.
You know, it ain't over until the filing deadline, but why should people vote for you in this multi-candidate race and not one of your opponents?
I am the most qualified person to be sitting on city council. I have had years of experience working within city government through appointments to various commissions and task force by two mayors, Mayor White and Mayor Parker. I have been working with the city to make the city better. Second part of that of experience is that my business, what I do for a living, my small business, is a consulting to deal with permitting and licensing within the city, which takes me to various parts of the city and the city government, various departments within the city and city government. I see how it runs. I see how it can run better. I know from this experience that I can bring to council an insight into what many of them may not know, how the city actually operates in the field. What is the impression that the citizen has when they interact with the city? Many people have to hire me to help them with that interaction. And in doing so, I can bring that to council. Other part of that is that I have been an advocate and a voice for many areas and communities of the city. I'm there. I've spoken for them. I've demonstrated in the streets. I've marched with people. I have listened to the people, and I do that. I've been an advocate for many people, advocate for senior citizens. I sponsor lunches and breakfasts simply because it's the thing to do. Not because I'm running for office, because I've done it for years, but because I listen to what they have to say and what's important to them. And what I hear from many of the senior citizens are two things. One, I wish I had a better sidewalk so I could walk to the store instead of having to walk in the street. And the other thing is about safety and not feeling that they're captive in their own home. And those are the things I've heard. Those are the experiences, the insight that I bring to council. I want to be that voice, that advocate for people who don't have a voice or whose voices aren't heard, and someone who will advocate for the betterment of all citizens.
All right, Jennifer Poole, thank you very much for talking.
You're welcome.